Fantastic.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Yay! Jessica Ward is currently doing shorthand, advanced shorthand. Emma Tinson is in Sheffield, where she's actually watching Spectre in IMAX. And we still don't know what happened with Miss Teen UK. Hopefully, currently Miss Teen Lincoln, Eva McDonald, who's currently elsewhere. But we have a quartet of quality inevitably with us. In fact, actually, it means, Kat and Nick, you are the senior co-presenters, Midweek Drivettes today.
Goodness, really.
You've reached that stage.
Oh, fantastic.
18 months after the man in Nashville said, yeah, Nick and Kat, they produce such magical stuff, they should be featured on air. Today, you should be proud of the boys and the girls, of course, boy and girl collectively. Let's not get gender realigned at this stage. Well done, Cameron, because your team are currently the main co-presenters on the show today. Doesn't that make you feel pride, Cameron?
It does. It does, yeah. I'm all higgledy-piggledy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It is Nashville, and the weather has been equally wet in Nashville as it has been in Lincoln today. So, Nick Elliott, ace rock photographer, looking at some of the classic images that he's put there. In fact, Steve's getting a perfect view of that. Those are just some of the magical images that our ace photographer, Nick Elliott, has come up with on his website there. Now, that's serious rock photography.
That's fantastic. Mm.
But not as fantastic as what you've been doing with Sounddog, we hear, because we'll be finding out about that as the programme proceeds. Dylan's already sort of said to me, really reappraise it, because we had all sorts of Sounddog stuff in there, but no, Dylan said, no, he wasn't happy with this, Steve wasn't happy, he sent some more. Yeah. So that'll be coming up during the course of the programme. But given that Dylan and Steve are both music aficionados, I believe. I mean, Dylan, obviously, BBC Lincolnshire. Lots of music.
Yeah, so. I wouldn't say that was definitely music, but I do have a record or two.
Exactly. So what better way than to actually thrust straight away into Cameron's choice of music, which, again, the only issue I have with this, Cameron, is the grammar. I think it's terrible. But, you know, that's by the by. It should surely be Johnny Cash and Me, not Me and Johnny Cash. So often we have undergraduates who can't get the grammar right, and we just think, where are we going with this? But I'm prepared to let that go in this instance, because it's over to you to introduce today's Cameron Tilbury MapleStar Music and Media selection.
I think the best comeback for your issue with the grammar is a well considered one. I'll give it to you now.
Or is that wah with a capital W-H-A or wah? A sort of duck-like wah. More Howard the Duck. Okay, I shall say no more. I'll close my microphone now.
We've got a great song today. This young lady, I got the chance to interview her during CMA Music Festival here in Nashville back in June. We had a lot of fun with that, and she was just starting to break out. She's originally from Asheville, North Carolina. And she's moved here to Nashville she started to move here just to write, but she found she liked singing and entertaining too. And she got a brand new EP out and on a brand new label here in Nashville. She's currently working on her debut album with producer Russ Zavidson. And her first single, which was called Turn Me On Like the Radio, was named the SiriusXM Highway Find. It made it to number 17 on the charts. This EP was released in June of this year. This is the first single from it. I think you're going to like it. She's coming over to the UK and Ireland later on this year, so you may have a chance to catch her then. Her name is Rainey Qualley, and this is me and Johnny Cash on Siren FM.
Okay, officially the raciest video you've ever introduced us to, Cameron. We've got bondage, we've got shoplifting, we've got... What is Rainey? What are you doing there, girl? So, I suppose there's a new generation, but still, me and Johnny Cash and a bottle of wine, and the wine gets broken as well. It's smashed on the floor. Even the police end up in handcuffs. It's outrageous. That's because she's an actress as well. But as you know, Cameron, it's not just my views on this. In fact, I'm the least important person in this. It's the team. So Nick Elliott, in between taking selfies with Dylan and Steve, what's not to love? What did you make of Rainy Quali?
Actually, I really love the track. I've been picking up on this stuff anyway since Cameron's kind of been promoting the woman and looked at it before. So yeah, I like it. Yeah, top US stuff.
Ace publicist Kat?
Well, I mean, it's everything, isn't it? The song's there, the looks are there, the video's
bondage,
there, the bond.
Got, yeah,
what's
yeah,
not to like? Precise. I mean, it's a PR dream, isn't it?
Yeah. Steve Kirkby, did it help you get foot tapping? Oh, unfortunate turn of phrase. I couldn't resist it. Only 10 minutes into the programme, and already he's talking about this. 5:10.
It was tuneful.
Ah, all right, yeah.
And some eye candy going on there as well.
Eye candy. You like the legs?
Well, being that way inclined, yes, I did.
Well, there you go. That's it. Non-PC stuff. Dylan.
Yeah, it was going well until somebody dropped a bottle. And it was, I didn't catch. Did it have anything in it?
Yes.
Oh,
red wine.
Right. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just dreadful. That's just
upsetting. It's a waste. It's a waste. Yeah. I've got to say, Cameron, do you think Rainey will be able to join us on the show to actually explain the challenges of dropping bottles of wine live on air?
I'll see what I can hook up. Yeah, she's pretty busy, but I think we might be able to do it.
Well, there you are. You've also got Turn Me On Like the Radio. Lord knows what that's about. But still, it's just so many great stuff there. Really quality. I think it's a thumbs up. What do you think, guys? I mean,
it's definitely a
thumbs up thing. So well done. Well done indeed.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You've seen the video. Does she look at all familiar to you?
Does she look at her? What are you sort of asking by that? What's the implication? What's the implication between that? You know, what's the sort of like? I've already said she's an actress. She's got her own IMDb page, which is always wonderful from that point of view. She's clearly starred.
Her mother is a her mother is a very famous actress.
Oh, and I haven't done my research on that particular area. Did we recognise the likely mother of this individual, sir?
No way.
But then, you see, I don't believe that stars should actually simply come to the fore just on the basis of who their parentage is. Witness Jason Connor.
And that's why I didn't tell you who it was before. Okay. I wanted to let you know.
Hillary Clinton? Is it Hillary Clinton? No, sorry.
No.
All right, then.
No, her mother... Her mother is Andie MacDowell.
Ah, there you are.
I see.
You see, exactly, from the notions of 4 weddings and a funeral, right the way through to, and there we are, clearly Rainey Quali, which doesn't even sound like MacDowell in any way, shape, or form. So.
There you go.
Nevertheless, as you can certainly relate to the whole team, it's been a rainy day in Lincoln in more ways than one, and in Nashville.
There you go.
I wonder if that's ever been used by any of her publicists. Oh, I see she's doing mathematical calculations and turning on like the radio. We could actually have a whole show just dedicated to describing videos that you two could actually access. Only if it's safe and legal to do so.
I thought you were going to cue in a record there. It's sort of Rainy Night in Lincoln.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Rainy Night in Lincoln.
It's not BBC Lincolnshire, Dylan. You know, we step aside from that kind of cliches. Mind you, having said that, it might well come through. From your own point of view, Nick, any questions you want to put to Cameron?
I mean, we need to catch up very soon, my friend. We'll Skype.
We do.
And talk about, of course, Sound and Nick's Vision. The 2 latest volumes are now in the can. They're in the machine, and they'll be going out actually live a week tomorrow, actually. The first one will go out live a week tomorrow. That's volume 11, then volume 12 midway through November. We've also agreed, Cameron, there'll be a 2-hour special Sound and Nick's Vision festive piece of fun.
There you go.
Genius. Anyway, last 2 questions for Cameron, please. Kat.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today, Cameron?
Nice one. Nicely put. Very good.
I have. And very well worded. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. And will you be joining us again soon?
I'll be back next week.
Superb. Exactly. That's the kind of classical response that we have come to know and appreciate from that point of view. Cameron Tilbury, keeping it real, even from Nashville. Is it still raining in Nashville?
No, we had rain for about 4 days, and it finally stopped about mid-morning today. So,
well, there we have
hopefully
it.
Hopefully it will dry out.
All right, well, we hope so too, actually. Otherwise, you'd be flooded, and that would just be not good at all.
I heard she drove the silvery sports car.
think, dear listener, what Anna Lewis is sounding an awful lot sort of peculiar from Jersey these days? No, that's because Anna is temporarily taking a time out, but we are listening to the wonderful collaborative arts project, which is to do with Sound Dog. Isn't that right, Dylan?
It is, yes. What Sound Dog is, it's a sort of collaborative arts project, you've already said, between students, first-year students at the University of Lincoln, and a sound artist who we'll be talking to is joining us in the studio, Steve Kirkby. And the idea was that students would go out and record sounds of Lincoln, and then over a period of about 7-8 weeks, Steve would mould these into a piece of music that would represent Lincoln in the ears of the students, their kind of first impressions. You know, imagine being away from home, first time looking around Lincoln. You can hear in the background there, that sound there seems almost like quite ethnic in a way, and that kind of,
I think it's a call to prayer, surely.
Yeah, well, it's sort of it's representative in my mind, and that's the thing, it's interpretation. In my mind, it's to represent Lincoln's increasing cultural diversity. We can have been here for quite a while, tend to view Lincoln as a quite a traditional place, but I think if you're walking around Lincoln as a fresh student, you're seeing lots of different interactions taking place, and Steve's tried to capture that in this piece, which is a symphony. When you've listened to it quite a bit, as I have, you sort of listened, trying to pick out the themes to the whole thing. There are movements and there are moods to it, and there are themes that run all the way through. It's a lovely piece of work, but the main thing is that students have had the chance to engage with it as this collaboration. It's not Steve's work. Steve's done tons of work like this. But it's important that students are able to listen to it and actually influence Steve's editorial decisions.
Now, we've actually got a student in the studio with us, amazing enough, have we not? Or somebody who actually was fat for this. Would you like to do a quick introduction?
Yeah, go, yeah, that's you, man, yeah.
I'm Jake Berry. I'm a first-year audio student, and I was part of the Sandog initiative, what should we call it? I'd like to call it that, where we just went around Lincoln, in our section, the LN1 area of Lincoln, to record sounds of the city, be it cars, parks, horses, just
children crying.
Around. A lot of children crying, yeah. But
it's not that bad a city, honestly. Yeah. Let's have a little. We'll come back to you. We'll listen to the remaining sort of 30 odd seconds of Lincoln sound art, as we put it down. So, Kat, as somebody who's driven over from Cambridgeshire and Norwich and so on from that point of view, does this say Lincoln to you?
No, I don't think it necessarily says Lincoln, but I think what it does is tap into something that suggests some sort of an inner place, a spirituality or an emotional journey that somebody may be going on. So I think it certainly resonates from a deep level, not necessarily saying Lincoln, but then I haven't heard the whole album, so it probably takes me on a journey through various different stages around
Indeed.
The city.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah.
Steve, as somebody who, wealth of musical background, obviously from your own point of view, but when you first got talking with Dylan about this, was it something which you thought, you must be insane? Or was it something which appealed to your good self in terms
No,
of
it was something? Absolutely great, you know, because I'd done several long pieces before for installation artists. Christiana Cott, the main one that I've done three pieces with her, and they all ran for about 20-25 minutes length. So a piece of music, or should we say a sound art piece that you can really get your teeth into. You know, it's not a 3-minute or 4-minute pop song or whatever. Well, it's something that you can, you know, you can focus on and lose yourself in. Yeah,
and not likely to be featured on Pop Idol.
No.
Phil, from your perspective, again, similar kind of question. What were your thoughts when the project was originally suggested?
Well, obviously, it was a voluntary project to start with, so it was one of those things of, I've got nothing else to do, may as well see what it's about. And it was originally quite a strange idea, go out to Lincoln, collect some sounds, see what happens. But the end result has clearly shown that if you take the basic strands of just, I'd say, just noise, mash them together and actually have some technical know-how, you can actually create something that's quite impressive to listen to, and an impressive feat of both audio technology and composition skills.
We've talked over some of the key thing, and we'll be playing again some more for our Los Angeles correspondent Phil Leonis in the second part of the programme. This second sequence that we're just about to launch, I'll fire it off now. Is it best not to prepare people for what we're listening to, Dylan, or will you sort of say, actually, just let it go? Go with the flow. If you're stuck in a traffic jam, just go with the flow.
Go with the flow. The thing is that an artist will do one of two things. They'll give you an explanation of what the piece is supposed to mean, or what does this mean to you?
Sounds like Nick Elliott with his photographs all the time. First thing that springs to my mind is Art of Noise, circa the 1980s, and a development within the sort of popular music field of actually sort of using sounds and impacts. Nick, as somebody who had produced some fantastic visual images, and obviously inspired by rock music and aspects of that, what did you make of what we've just been listening to? Because we were having a nice little commentary in the studio from Dylan and Steve and company with respect to that. What did you make of
it? Well, I think it's a really exciting project. I mean, for me, I like what I'm hearing, although I've only obviously snippets, but it's creating an audio space is how I would term it. A lot of the legendary rock bands, we're talking Pink Floyd really, would be the biggest influence. From an album that they did, which was a double vinyl called Umma Gumma. Mm-hmm. And they took it, an OB, out and stuck it in the middle of Grantchester Meadows, just outside Cambridge, and they recorded the whole sounds that happened over a 24-hour period. And then that went on to the album. Mm. So it's got undertones of that kind of stuff for me, which is marvellous. I mean, that's my background. It's where it all kind of happened.
Prog rock is what it's all about.
Well, and also another band. I don't know whether Steve had probably been any relation to these, but a German band called Faust from the early 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
that did a similar project, you know, and it's in that kind of area for me. I love it. I love it. I think it's really good.
Thank
I think
you.
It's really, really nice. Cheers. And it's definitely up my boulevard.
Well, there we are. Thumbs up. Coming up very shortly, and we will be returning to, we refer to it as Sounddog, Dylan. Is that the best way forward? I mean,
Sounddog. Now, you see, Sounddog. Nothing but Sounddog.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See what you did there? It's all right. We're getting Blood from a Stone, Cycle 5, to take us around, hopefully, to the founder and chief executive officer of the York Maze, currently right in the middle of Hallo Scream. Giorgio Moroder incarnation of Metropolis, and if you want to see the original Fritz Lang Metropolis, you can see it in its wonderful uncut version mid-November, actually part of the wonderful series called The Culture Makers that we're running at the University of Lincoln in actually the Jackson Lecture Theatre. Most of the other series will be screened in the MTech building, but Metropolis gets a place in the Jackson Lecture Theatre. There we are, shameless plug. Meanwhile, if I turn now to our Facebook page, you can see in keeping of Halloween there, two pumpkins. They've been carved. Now, the role that was actually set up by the Chief Executive Officer of the York Maze, no less postage than Tom Piercy. Hello, Tom.
Good evening, Alan. Good evening.
As you know, Tom, you set Emma Tinson, Ed Wellman, and, well, actually Emma and Ed, really, because I had nothing to do with it other than pose. But the official task was what on Saturday when we did a location report for day one of Halloween, Hallo Scream at the York Maze?
It was to create a likeness of Alex out of a pumpkin.
So, the bottom line is, you've had a look at those particular areas there. Both attempts at actually drawing the likeness of yours truly there. One by Ed Wellman, currently doing fantastic work. The sort of work Steve Kirkby used to do before he decided to smash his foot. Oh, it happens. But we'll be returning to. And, of course, the notion there of Emma Tinson, who would have been here this evening. She sends her very best, Tom. It wasn't the excitement, but she's actually seeing the James Bond movie Spectre in IMAX in Sheffield. It happens.
You know, well done. I've just got back my from
that. Oh, did you see her?
I nipped out while it was a rainy day at the Maze. So,
well, before we actually consider on your own sort of views, what did you make of Spectre? Did you enjoy it? Is it pass muster?
I did. I'm a bit of a Bond fan, as you know. Among the many things I'm a fan of, Bond is one of them.
Yeah, so, well, and yeah. Of course,
any Bond film. Bond
was the theme of the York Maze back in the day, in the early part of the century, when, of course, you were doing.
So, what year was it, Alex? What
well,
year
that, it? I'm just actually pulling that. I think it was 2007. It had to be, didn't it? It had to
it
be.
It was. It was 2007.
The line that was clearly there, the year when Bond came to the York Maze, as opposed to Thunderbirds, which, of course, was this year's event. And there we have. You said,
of
Emma. However. Nick, you have an eye for detail, etc., and pulling around the details that obviously you know Emma Tinson, but one of those particular sort of images that we were looking at is supposed to be a better likeness of myself. You can see Ed there posing with the sort of sequence that we had there, one of those scenarios. Which one in your mind actually best sums up me?
I actually commented.
You did?
On this.
I noticed that, exactly. You said, I thought I recognised something about that pumpkin. It's Alex Lefchuk. So, you know.
It brought back very fond memories of you and me.
Oh, steady. I can hear you so many sound in Nick's visions. You know, think of the students. We're being taught by pumpkins. Where's that going to sit in terms of customer relations? But in terms of the, well, Dylan, then, which one of those do you think mostly sort of floats your boat in terms of being more like me than the other one?
It's got to be the one on the left.
The one on the left. Really?
The miserable pumpkin.
No, it's the one. Do you know how we're talking about James Bond. Do you know how that thing where he raises one eyebrow?
Well, Roger Moore did, at least.
He raised an eyebrow. Uh-huh, and he has a raised eyebrow.
Oh.
I
think that's more mate. Steve. You've worked with me over the years. We worked together for many a year with old communication students, etc. So, you know.
Now the skin turns well off.
And the other one, the other one has got a lopsided smile and something hanging from its nose.
No, I haven't been on Strictly Come Dancing, Tom, and I don't intend to get an orange routine unless you pay me significant sums of money. Student making his debut on the production because he didn't expect to be part of this, apart from the sort of sound dog scenario. Phil, which one do you think? Sort of.
Personally, I'm going with the one on the right.
The one on the right, yeah. And Kat?
Oh, definitely the one on the right. It's uncanny. The resemblance is uncanny.
In fact, you thought he's been replaced by a pumpkin when that actually sort of worked through. You're quite. Well, from your own perspective, Tom, because clearly you'd set this assignment, and there we are, Tom, with Emma, with the whole sort of decision there. Which one would you have given the award to? Because I know you were so busy on Saturday, we didn't have the time to actually, and you didn't have the time to actually deal with pumpkin judging competitions, for God's sakes. But of all the pumpkins.
Assuming we're sharing the same photo, I'm looking at one with two pumpkins on the table.
Yes,
the
yes.
Slightly miserable one on the left.
Yes.
The slightly chirpy, chipper pumpkin on the right.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And I think if it was purely judged on which one looks like Alex rather than which is the better pumpkin, I would have to go with the miserable pumpkin on the left.
Outrageous. Tom Piercy. I mean, after all those years, and even suggesting Thunderbirds as the theme for this year's maze, honestly.
I think the one on the left has moody, powerful look about it, Alex. When I said miserable, I meant intense, powerful.
Like Charles Bronson, one expression, you mean. Who's on the phone?
The one on the right
just
looks like a bit like a clown. I'm not having that.
A bit like a clown, but that's quite scary. Well, curiously, Stuart, who indeed actually judged the thing in your absence, actually went for Emma Tinson's pumpkin, and that was the official response, which was the slightly light-hearted one. Do you not have secretaries to answer phones these days, Tom? I mean, honestly. Yes.
No, she's there. She's picking up.
Excellent. That's okay. So Emma was the winner there from that point of view.
Okay. And, despite right. We'll leave it to Stuart's judgment. He lives in the pumpkin tent, so he's obviously an expert on these things.
Well, I should hope so. And he did actually utter those immortal words, do you want a small top or a big top from that point of view? That's Stuart there. Ed looking very worried about sort of being presented with a pumpkin. Anyway, that was just part of the sheer fun and entertainment and enjoyment, which we're midway through because it is Halloween at the York Maze, followed in an evening by Hallow Scream. Dylan, of course, you
celebrate. We have 80 actors just in makeup at the minute, Alex.
80 actors in makeup at this moment in time. Dylan, how could you possibly have given up Hallow Scream at the York Maze for some kind of strange, bizarre summer solstice festival?
I prefer my pagan rituals, a bit more kind of raucous.
A bit more raucous than the York Maze. Yes. He hasn't been to the York Maze, Tom. You know, this is the thing. He hasn't been to the York Maze. Why should Dylan and Steve and Kat and Nick and Phil make their way to the York Maze, and of course our listener, Hello. To the York Maze. Why should they actually be there? What is the happening thing about the York Maze, particularly, well, all times of the year, but particularly during Halloween week?
Well, Halloween week on a night time is our sort of massive scare event where we have five haunted houses, roaming scare actors, and it's literally the most terrifying thing anyone will ever do.
The most terrifying thing anything will ever do. There we are, you see. York Maze spooky Halloween fun. We're just looking at the front scenario here. There is, of course, Hallow Scream, which in its own way is just even more surreal and wonderful. Yes, Kat, Hallow Scream. You can see it actually up there in every sense of the word. Hallow Scream at York Maze, a live scare event with five, as you rightly said, Tom, five separate haunted attractions for visitors with a wide range of food and drink and zombie-themed exit bar. It could almost be like for the University of Lincoln. All we need is the zombie-themed exit bar and we'll be up those league tables again. any other particular aspects, Cameron, Tom, that you'd like to actually flag up about York Maze and why it is just... I mean, Dylan, a week or so ago, yeah, we were obviously celebrating Countryside Live.
We were. It was a great event. Yeah, cider.
Here's something which takes that Countryside Live, wraps it up into a bowl, bounces it around, and basically comes back in a very scary way.
Yeah.
Tom, would you like to deal with some questions from the team? I'll take that as a yes then. Right, okay, very quickly. Dylan, quick, go for it. Otherwise, we'll be going to the news and all sorts of things.
That's fine.
Questions.
I won't be able to hear the answer because I haven't got any headphones, but don't worry too much about that. Okay, is it suitable for small children? I'm talking about 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
The daytime is, the night times definitely isn't. The night times, we put a 14A rating on it, but we do find many people sort of over 20 run home shouting for their mothers. So, yeah.
I thought you weren't going to mention my own experience of the Hallow Scream thing a couple of years ago. But yes, during the day.
During
it's
the
fine.
Day, I'm all right.
During
yeah.
the day is all right. But a bit like Lincoln, during dust falls. Night. Get the heck out of town! Sorry, Lincoln. But we know it's very sorry. Kat, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, what time is it running from? You know.
What time is it running
yes.
from?
That's a very good question. It opens at 6 o'clock every night and we close at 11. But unfortunately, if anyone is thinking of coming, there are no tickets left.
No more tickets left. Yeah, exactly.
The event is fully sold out. We sold out about a week ago.
And that's the kind of success rating that we can actually have with respect to Tom Pierce and York Maze. So it's just truly tremendous in every sense of the word. Tom, we appreciate you actually sharing some of the delights and scary things. I mean, are you a Halloween fan, Phil? Is it something that appeals to yourself?
To be honest,
yes.
For me, every day is Halloween.
Yeah.
But that's only because
Dylan teaches you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. I was going to say it's more that I associate with scary characters. But that is only partially true because I am a scary character.
That's the message. Tom Piercy, have you had a reasonably interesting and slightly scary telephoning link with us on the Midweek Drive this evening?
I have indeed. Could I wish all the listeners a happy Halloween? I know it's not Halloween today, but it will be soon. So I'm just going to get that out there. Happy Halloween.
It's the spirit of Halloween that you just can't get away from in any way, shape or form. And if you find anybody actually sort of has a chainsaw or an axe or something and happens to be sort of smiling in a bizarre way at you, call the police. That's my line. Call the police. Just ignore it. I take it, Tom, you will be back with us very soon. And in fact, actually, let's look at getting Tom Pierce into the radio studios. You can make it from Yorkshire to Lincoln, can't you, Tom?
It's not a million miles away,
exactly.
Is it?
We've done the reverse journey, so I think we'll look to get you in for a sort of Christmas special. A round of applause for Tom Piercy, please.
Yay!
News will be coming up in a matter of moments from Siren 107.3 FM, but to take us around that, something you might just recognise.
Thank you.
Australian band Men at Work with Be Good Johnny. Perfect introduction to an ace Australian actress.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent. Now live on the Midweek Drive.
Exactly. Annette, good evening, yeah. Good morning. I know we got the email saying, what happened? You're supposed to be coming to us at 5.55 UK time. We are! It's just the clocks went back. If you haven't realised the clocks have actually gone back, then...
Isn't it annoying when the clocks all go different and nobody knows about it?
Very convenient. And it happens every year. It's unbelievable. You'd think we were in a different time zone entirely. But still, you know, we've managed to connect together. And what's the time like in San Diego at this moment in time?
At this moment in time, we're at just before 11 a.m. in the morning. But when the clocks go back, it'll be just before 10 a.m. in the morning. Exactly. That'll be next week, I think.
And by the time next month, we'll be back to our kind of at times and we'll be resynchronized. That's the important thing. Resynchronized
yes, that's
with
right.
life and so on.
How funny.
Anyway.
I got quite worried. I thought, oh, goodness, what's happened?
Exactly. It's a bit, never mind. You're here. You're with us. What delightful, wonderful audio missive are you going to be sharing with the team today? A quintet of quality. Some of our regulars are kind of out and about checking out things like James Bond movies and so on, or shorthand scenarios.
Oh, right.
So we have the ace photographer, Nick Elliott. We have Alison or Kat, ace publicist. We also have Dylan Rice, who's a senior academic at the University of Lincoln in the media department. We've got Steve Kirkby, who's a media advisor and also collaborator in process. And we also have Jake, nothing to do with Phil at all, but surprisingly sounding very much like Phil, who's one of the student collaborators there. They're all waiting with interest, having sort of been reminded of your extremely talented CV in terms of what are you going to share with us today, Annette Andre?
Well, it might interest some of you. The Trump Who Cried Wolf. Haha. There's a rumor afoot that some savvy publisher is retitling Aesop's fables and flogging them as Ethics for Dummies. Actually, I'm launching the idea here in the hope that some charitable dupe will take up the notion and introduce Mr. Aesop to the masses, a great slab of which is now in dire need of his spot-on brand of easily digested counseling. Aesop, a Greek slave and humane rival to the forbiddingly negative Ten Commandments, is currently on my mind, as just last week I posted a treasured copy of the fables I loved as a child to my grandchildren in London. Unlike the commandments with their finger-pointing, guilt-inducing, unforgiving menu of shalt nots, the fables offer a petting zoo of common-sense-talking furries to help guide us through the perilous passages of life. For every BP environmental disaster, VW diesel debacle, or Barclays financial fiddle, any one of which may well end up frog-marching these villains down Queer Street, Aesop's Fables has a cautionary tale for all to avoid a similar fate. But it's not difficult to see why the fables have segued from their original intent to steer adults along the moral and ethical paths of everyday life to a simplified primer for children. The only problem with this swap in audience is that if any of the fables are remembered in adulthood, they're usually reduced to clichés. One good turn deserves another. A wolf in sheep's clothing, blah, blah, blah. What's been lost here is the invaluable insights and deeper meanings behind the one-liners. And yet, there they were after all this time, taking pride of place in children's libraries and bedrooms, but overlooked by the grown-ups to make use of Aesop's wisdom that once was in daily play more than 2,000 years ago. Take Donald Trump. Oh, yes, please, as an old-time music hall comic might have pleaded. Here's a man whose intellectual assets strain the gamut from A to B. That aside, he's managed to inflame a large, demented segment of America's far right, who want him to be their next president. Like a carnival snake oil pitchman, he spews a venomous mix of bigotry, rampant sexism, and adult political views that would do the 8th century proud. The central points of every speech he makes is that Mexicans who want to live in the U.S. are rapists and killers, And for every Syrian refugee hoping to find safe harbor in America, three more are ISIS suicide bombers. And just in case you missed his message, Donald Trump has descended to Earth to save the U.S. from its better instincts. What would it take to get this self-inflating ego with the egg yolk pompadour back in his playpen? Nothing less than Aesop's classic tale of a liar who lied once too often, the boy who cried wolf. I'm advocating that every journalist who interviews Trump be armed with a copy. That said, and in the interest of full disclosure, I must point out that the boy's story so perfectly mimics Trump's irrational behavior that this serial litigator would probably consider suing Aesop for trademark infringement. It's still early days into the new century, but we seem to be stalled smack in the center of a perfect storm of villainy, deceit, and mayhem that so far has resisted all attempts by religion and the law to cease and desist. Widespread abuse of children by the Catholic Church and a gaggle of freelancers like Jimmy Savile, Rolf Harris, and Gary Glitter practically cry out for a law ordering a public reading of a wolf in sheep's clothing for every offense. And just imagine that if Rupert Murdoch had taken time to refresh himself with the goose that laid a golden egg, he might have been spared the loss of his favorite scandal rag and avoided the public pie in the face of televised shaming. Like the searchlight signal sent high into the night sky over Gotham to summon Batman to the rescue, let's hear a resounding shout-out for the Wizard of Athens to save our day. Well, if you think this is pie-in-the-sky wishful thinking, that 2,000-year-old shaggy dog stories might have a relevance in today's world, then I suggest that you take a deep breath before you think of calling someone a bird brain. Unless, of course, you mean that they're another Einstein. A recent university science study used Aesop's The Crow and the Jug as a basis for testing the intelligence of crows and children. The story relates the plight of a thirsty crow who comes upon a half-filled jug of water standing next to a pile of stones. The crow drops stones into the jug until the water level rises enough for him to drink. The researchers quickly discovered that Aesop's story was accurately describing the crow's problem-solving intelligence. More than half the birds tested duplicated the behavior of Aesop's hero in rapid time as they used stones to raise the water level in half-filled containers. Continuing the experiment with children aged 4 to 10, the researchers found that the performance of children between 5 and 7 years was similar to the birds, while the 8 to 10-year-olds had little trouble solving the problem on the first trial. I don't know about you, but I find this pretty heady stuff. Birds that can suss out a problem that the researchers point out involves a basic law of physics. Of the 200-odd fables that are in print, The Crow and the Jug stands out as a shining example of why I believe that the teachings of Aesop are timeless and still valuable to our lives today. Which brings me to the inescapable question of how Mr. Trump would fare, given a half-filled jug and a pile of stones. You may well wonder why I'm not holding my breath. That's it.
Exactly. And he'd probably send those stones back over the border where they obviously belong, and they sort of emerge to sort of border stones.
And tell you that they're fake stones and they...
Yeah, exactly. They're fake stones. Oh. They have no place in the United States of America as it stands.
Absolutely. You have no idea of the absolute maniac idiocy that's going on today.
Well, that's what you call democracy.
Anyway, that's my thoughts on it.
And that, as ever, incisive stuff. Let's open it up. Kat, what did you make of the Aesop's fable scenario of using that as a testing ground for politicians in the world?
It's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? I mean, like a lot of these things, you know, you only have to look back to some of the classics to see really what is all intents and purposes, what is common sense, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I think in those days they used to actually think.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And a bit like the crows, do some problem solving rather than just take things on face value and make something up that is for all intents and purposes, just imagination.
We're not suggesting that you should vote a crow in as president, but, you know.
I don't know.
It could happen. They could have a bald eagle, you know, why not? Nick, from your own point of view, thoughts on that one?
Well, it's actually made me think about investigating this Donald Trump scandal or whatever it is, which I don't know that much about. To be honest, I've only picked up bits on social media, but what the guy's up to, I don't really know. But I will have a look into it now.
It's more a case of what isn't he up to?
Right,
he's
okay.
He's actually trying to become president of the United States. I mean, we're really done for if he gets in. I can tell you.
I mean,
right,
you know, it's a ridiculous thing. There could be a Hollywood actor who once starred in Bedtime for Bozo actually becoming, or a German actor who was Mr. Universe could actually become governor of California.
Unthinkable. Unthinkable.
Exactly. I mean, Dylan, as somebody who's not considering changing your nationality to actually run for president of the United States, it's a possibility. Thoughts on what Annette was sharing with us?
Well, firstly, I do believe
actually,
that...
Alex, I did think that maybe there is a possibility if we can just get get them to pass a particular thing to let them into the country. I reckon if we put Graham Norton or Ken Dodd, they'd be a good chance to win above Trump.
Ken Dodd, of course, is a regular on the Midweek Drive, so I think Ken Dodd for President of the United States, he's got his tickling stick, that would actually sort of entertain the Chinese, so, you know, all sorts of other scenarios on that basis.
I think he'd do a far better job.
the campaign starts here. Not so much Graham Norton, possibly, but I think Ken Dodd... Hey, sorry, Dylan.
Yes, for goodness sake, let me in. Well, for a start, Alex, I think you'll find that Ken Dodd couldn't possibly be the President of the United States. As a scholar of American politics, you will know that you have to have been born in the United States.
Didn't stop the Hawaiians.
Oh, yes, but I thought we could get a pass on that one. You know, I think everybody here is begging for mercy. Even some of the Republicans, I think, would do anything to put someone else in, yes.
Could be worse, could be Kanye West.
Anyway. Could be. Yes, but the idea of having a basic kind of moral test, I think, for any politician that's going to be elected is quite a good one. The problem is getting them to give a straight answer. So they go on a chat program and have to solve a series of quite difficult moral dilemmas and come up with an answer that is satisfactory for the electorate that shows a depth of
thinking. Have
you
ever known a politician, be they American or English, who have actually come up with an answer to the question?
Yeah, it's a matter of a...
That's why they're politicians.
We'll come back to you on that one. You know.
You've got to have a good interviewer, haven't you?
Well, there is the classic line, you know, how can you tell when a politician is lying? Their lips move. enough of stuff. You know, we love our politicians, don't we, Steve Kirkby?
Of course.
What are your thoughts on Annette's views? You think that's a way forward?
Having read the fables when I was a child between, you know, 6 and 7... what have you, and then continued to enjoy them. I totally agree with her sort of viewpoint on them being used, used in contemporary society. I really do, and I've got to agree as well with Dylan on most points as well. Yeah.
You're shaking your head there, Jake. Is that because you disagree violently, or is it just a case of there's a nervous tick? I don't know. It's first show.
No, genuine neck pain.
Genuine neck pain. Okay, so in terms of what you've heard, I mean, as the next generation, the youngest one in the studio, thoughts on this?
Common sense usually prevails. However, in this case, it's not doing so. And generally...
President Trump, though, has got tremendous comedy value.
Oh, it's hugely.
Mind you, it's a one-line joke. Would you really sort of comedy value it at all? You know,
it's such food for the comedians. It's wonderful, wonderful fodder for the comedians.
And a whole new routine for raspberries, which is fantastic. President Trump.
I suspect that Trump doesn't have the same connotation in the
United
States.
I don't know. I mean, Trump, as in a euphemism for flatulence. I'm sure we could actually see lots of hot air from the wrong end of the orifice coming out.
And I suppose not only is he a one-line joke from his name, like, once he gets into power, he's a laughing stock.
Well, yeah. There we are, you see. But anyway, that's the Midweek Drive's attempt to actually solve United States of America politics for the 21st century. And I think you've done, as an Australian citizen, Annette, you've done extraordinarily well on that. And wish your country well in the upcoming Rugby World Cup against New Zealand. Not that you'll be watching it, but anyway, it's just a thought.
Oh, is that happening, is it?
We say the same in England, actually. Is it happening, that kind of thing? You know, Southern Hemisphere stuff, Rugby World Cup, whatever, you know.
I know. I've enjoyed this very much.
Excellent.
Alex.
So I take it you'll be back with us again for a November, possibly pre or maybe even post Thanksgiving event, and more Annette Andre views from San Diego and beyond.
Right. I would love to come back.
A round of applause for Annette Andre, please.
Yay.
Thank you.